Short answer, because of the Electoral College. But there's some deeper answers than that. This should not have been close. This election should not have been close.
But it was.
But it was. So you go ahead. Why did she lose?
Well, I'm going to suggest a number of things apart from some structural elements like the fact of the Constitution. I'm going to suggest that she was a candidate who had no appeal. No appeal, except to a liberal minority who, along with people who would support her for two reasons, they thought she would be better than Trump, and she was a woman.
No appeal except for the 3 million more people.
Yeah. Dismiss them.
No.
Put them out of your
No, I'm not going to dismiss
Forget
them.
Forget them. They don't count.
Why, in your opinion, did she have no appeal?
She sounded awful. See, the
what
whole thing,
mean?
The whole, let me finish. All the right. whole thing of presidential elections, the whole thing of popular system in America is like an advertising campaign for shoes or gasoline or anything else. And Trump understood that, and Trump played on that. And she, meanwhile, every time she asserted something, said, go to my website, which most poorer people, most ordinary people don't do and didn't do. Secondly, she jumped on a weird wagon in late into the middle of the contest, talking about people who are supporting Trump as deplorables. So in other words, she insulted anyone on the fence or anyone who supported Trump, hardening their position against her.
Yeah.
Just that. That was plenty.
You think the deplorables comment tipped the scales against her?
There's no way to know, but yeah, I believe that.
Okay.
And I believe that she was not a pleasant, she did not make a pleasant presentation of self. She was not the person I liked. I didn't like Trump. Let me be clear. I was a Bernie guy, and I didn't like the way Bernie was treated by the Democratic Party. My perception, and whether it's real or not, I'm not going to argue. My perception was that the Democratic Party did not want Bernie to be the candidate, and they did everything they could do to make sure that candidate would be a Hillary.
Yeah, we do know it's really beyond a doubt that a segment of the Democratic establishment didn't want Bernie to be the nominee, and essentially loaded the dice against him.
Yeah,
we know that to be true.
Okay,
but I want to get back to why you feel she didn't present herself in a pleasant way. What does that mean? How does a presidential candidate present him or herself in a pleasant way?
First of all,
and is there a different standard for female candidates in terms of pleasantness?
Well, the answer to that, the last question, is yes, unfortunately there is. We are a very sexist society. And in order to overcome that sexism, a candidate has to present herself as powerful, as pleasant, as motherly, sorry, but this is true, as possible. And what she did present herself as was not what that stereotype fits.
We don't have a template for a successful female presidential candidate. So how do we know these things are true? How do we know somebody needs to come across as motherly?
Well, the question of motherly is, of course, loaded. But we do know that someone has to come across as competent and pleasant. She came across, unfortunately, and again, this has a lot to do with sexism. I'm not going to argue that. She came across as shrill and unclear and defensive.
Okay, but you just said it has a lot to do with sexism. You're not going to argue that. So are you essentially conceding that sexism was a big factor in her loss?
Of course.
Okay. I'm glad we understand that. I'm glad we've established.
Did you think that I would deny that?
Well, I don't know.
Okay.
I don't know. I'm just trying to figure. I'm trying to figure out what you mean by the statement that says she didn't present herself pleasantly. And I think that wrapped up in that is a stereotypical conception of how women ought to present themselves.
Wrapped up in that is a stereotypical conception of how a person needs to present, not woman, a person needs to present themselves to win in a society which is dominated by a population of ignorant people.
Indeed, but we all know how women are described when they start demonstrating qualities that are traditionally associated with powerful men.
Yeah.
We all know how there's all sorts of unpleasant terms that are applied to them. All sorts of statements regarding, well, maybe she ought to, you know, stick to what she knows or what women should be doing.
Well, I'm not sure that particular example is apt, but you're right.
Okay.
And so, there's no question that a large part of why she was defeated rests in our cultural biases against women as politically powerful people.
All right. Well, I'm glad we agree on that point.
Well, I'm glad we agree on that point, too. Yeah, it'd be weird to do that on cable and not agree on that point.
That's true. Okay, because I boiled it down to four major points, and misogyny is one of them.
Yes.
Well, okay, we'll get to the rest. I just wanted to hear where you're coming from on this.
Did you think I would deny misogyny?
No, I did not.
Okay.
I did not.
Good.
I just wanted to dig a little deeper into your description.
See. Digging into misogyny sounds really perverted.
It does. We've got a phone call.
Already?
Yeah. Sheila, good morning. What's on your mind?
Good morning. Well, I think, you know, Donald Trump was appealing to the emotions of the people who felt disenfranchised. Hillary presented herself as one of the status quo. She had to start saying, you know, I really feel, I understand how you're struggling, and we've got to change. I mean, she had to take a page out of Donald Trump's book, only present it in a softer way, understanding how everybody is struggling and so on and so forth. He was just, you know, when it comes to logic and emotion, emotion's going to come across and win first. People are going to respond to their fears, their needs, their anxieties. And she didn't present anything that would respond to that.
I agree with you. I think that's a good analysis, by the way.
Yeah, I think that was a very big factor. She didn't change from any other politician. She gave the same speeches. I mean, anybody could have done the same thing, but it was the status quo.
I think you're right. I also think it was a strategic error to keep saying, go to my website, rather than what Bernie did, which is really interesting, as I recall, was it was five specific things that he advocated strongly. He repeated them every single speech, every single time.
Right.
And that is the key to advertising. You repeat the message over and over again. Also, they were good things.
Well, Donald Trump is a master at manipulation.
Yes.
And he was doing just that. He'd repeat a key phrase every time. He'd say it two or three times, maybe three or four times. When he finished a sentence, he would say this thing that he wanted to impress upon people. She's not a good. He knows how to manipulate people.
Mm-hmm.
And Bernie came across in the same, not the same way. He came across without the violence as Trump did. I believe Bernie would have won if he hadn't been sabotaged.
I disagree. I like to think he would, but I don't think he would have.
Why not?
I would direct your attention to a piece written in Newsweek immediately following the election by Kurt Eichenwald. Eichenwald was in a position to look at the opposition research that the Republican Party conducted on Bernie.
Uh-huh.
And the things that he related in his Newsweek piece suggest to me that Bernie would not have been able to weather the storms that resulted from that opposition research.
Now, what did Bernie do that was considered unwinnable?
Well, I'm citing now from memory, and I can bring up this article here and talk a little bit more in detail about it as the show goes on. But right off the top of my head, a couple things stand out. One is a video taken several decades ago in Nicaragua with Bernie speaking in support of boy, the name's escaping me. Help me out here.
The Sandinistas.
The Sandinistas, yes. The second was his authorship of an article way back in the day. You know what? Before I answer that question, I'm going to pull up this article by Eichenwald so that I don't err in relating what I'm saying. Is that
so
fair?
He had some skeletons in his closet.
Some skeletons in his closet, yes.
I think it's fair to say.
Yeah.
And the skeletons specifically were social democratic beliefs.
Yeah. Well, no, there was more than that. But he had some skeletons, yes.
Okay, well, I need to know what...
I will get that, pull that up
okay.
Right now.
Yeah, I'd really like to know that because I mean, Bernie to me is an honest guy, and I, you know, if take it on character and qualities, I think Bernie should have won.
He was the father I never had.
Yeah, father I never had too.
Yeah, the father most of us never had,
yeah.
And that really is, you know, when you're talking politics in America, and probably most places, but certainly in the United States, these stereotypes, these images are very, very important. And this goes also to the problem of Hillary, which was she was never the mother we never had.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that that very unfairly, and I want to be clear here, I am not a person who thinks that she should not have run. I am not a person who thinks she should not have been president. What I am thinking is that her campaign was not well run and did not take into account the huge number of people who, mostly because of changes in the economy and changes in the development of industry, felt disenfranchised, felt threatened for their jobs, and were very, very disappointed and very, very angry over the years that essentially put them in a position where their wages were, in real terms, lowered.
Right. Well, and also, Trump promised the moon, and he's still promising the moon, and he's still, as far as he's concerned, he knows better than any than the generals and the scientists. He knows things that they don't know.
Right.
I mean, I think that is hilarious whenever he comes out and says that. But, you know, just to get back, he appealed to the emotions. People were struggling. They want to know that they can be helped. And that's what he was telling them. The only thing that she came out with was, I think, free college tuition and a couple of other things that I don't even recall.
Well, and the college tuition came out of the Bernie campaign.
That's right. Well, she should have followed more of what Bernie's approach, and made it. Maybe it would have made a difference. But right now, I fear for the country, as a lot of people do.
Absolutely.
Oh no, there's no question in my mind. I want to be clear about this. My criticisms of her do not extend to the suggestion that she shouldn't have won the contest. And in fact, in real popular terms, of course, she did win.
Yeah, right.
She did.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you for the call. I appreciate it.
Yeah. So what we're doing here is analyzing how it is and why it is, as far as we can tell, that Hillary Clinton, who was obviously, in terms of her own career, in terms of her preparation, in terms of her knowledge base, more than qualified to be president of the United States, and yet was rejected by countless numbers of working class and middle class people.
Yeah, and we should offer a caveat there. Yes, experienced and qualified to be president of the United States, but many people on the left, I think with great cause, criticize the coziness that she has with very wealthy and very powerful people, as well as her willingness to support a very hawkish foreign policy.
I think that latter one is very important.
Yeah, I believe it is as well. I was, in the end, I cast my vote for her. I can't say I was an enthusiastic supporter. And a big factor in that was, first, her support of the war in Iraq, and secondly, her role as the architect of the disastrous intervention in Libya.
I think both of those are real, and both of those are good criticisms of her and left her quite vulnerable. And she did not in any way structure an answer to those criticisms.
Yeah. So regarding the skeletons in Bernie's closet, I don't want to take time out of the show.
I wish we had a sound effect to rattle bones.
Right. The article that I want to direct you to is in Newsweek by Kurt Eichenwald, published on the 14th of November last year. It's entitled "The Myths Democrats Swallowed That Cost Them the Presidential Election." And one of the sections of this article talks in some detail about the opposition research on Bernie. So it's well worth your time, and I would encourage people to go read it.
Okay.
All right.
Now, of course, you're doing exactly what she did. Every time there was a question, she said, go to my website.
Yeah, I'm doing exactly what she did.
Exactly.
Yeah, exactly. Except the contexts are entirely different.
Except that you're not.
Okay. So have you, to your satisfaction, explained why she lost the race? Is there more to dig into?
Yeah, there is a lot more to dig into.
Okay.
I mean, there is, in fact, a vicious campaign against her, which
Indeed.
Was extremely effective, which suggested that because of certain vulnerabilities, like what happened in Northern Africa, that she was in fact a liar and a criminal.
Yeah,
and that, you know, always works. Smearing always works.
Smearing always works. That's unfortunately true. Why don't we take another call or two, and then I'll I'll run down my my list of top five reasons.
Sure.
Chris, you're up next.
Good morning. How's
Good morning.
It going?
Very well. How are you?
So I think there's a number of reasons, really, that we could run down. In terms of the immediate, the context of the election itself, you know, I want to agree with Joe, but try to be a little more articulate in terms of what.
Well, thanks a lot.
Yeah, I think, well, you said she sounded horrible. And what.
Okay, I agree. But, that is not a very clever response.
Yeah, so I think I agree, but I want to say she did sound like an ad. And she sounded flat. She sounded insulated. She sounded disconnected. And you know, listening to, say, the last caller talking about the difference between, you know, kind of a rational presentation and an emotional presentation, she was somewhat rational but dispassionate versus Trump, who may not have said anything that was true or made any sense, but he was very passionate. He was touching on that emotional nerve that kind of bypasses our ability to think and plan. Mm-hmm. And so I think that's, you know, she came across as that status quo establishment. I'm going to say the same thing regardless of how you're really feeling, or no matter what election year it is, right? She didn't really seem to adapt to the situation. And so that came across as people just didn't connect with her because she didn't seem to have that emotional depth that that was required in order for the policy she was talking about to really connect with people. In the way, like, conversely, if you look at Bernie, he had that passion and he had that emotional connection, and then the policies that he was putting forward, really we got a sense that those were coming out of his passion and connection to the pulse of the American public, right? So I think that was why she sounded horrible, so to speak, in my opinion.
Yeah, no, I agree with you in a lot of ways. This is tricky. This whole topic is tricky because sexism really is an enormous factor in this contest. And
right.
to totally put that aside is to ignore the power relations and the biases of the culture at large.
Right.
And she faced that problem.
I put that down to as something to respond to because, and I don't think you meant this, Joe, but her presentation and, well, she has to do this X, Y, and Z. You know, it's like it's always, you know, the marginalized group, the dominant group puts the onus on the marginalized group to make the change, right? Well, you should have been more, or you should have been more this, or you should have been less that. And it's no matter what you do, you didn't get in the door because of the basic bias, right? But
yes.
there's always something you should have done differently.
Well, right? I think I really appreciate that point. It's very, very important because it's the same point often used against people of color.
Right, exactly. Well, next time try this. Or the reason you didn't pass is because you don't know enough. Or, right?
Yeah,
so
yeah,
all those different excuses that come up. So I think that was definitely a factor. But then we also have, you know, there's also, you know, what Greg Palast was reporting on with the voter purge through the cross-check program. There was the international meddling in elections by Russia. And then in the historical context, you know, we have this the groundwork that has been laid over the past several decades for a demagogue like Trump to step into the fray. You know, he's a reality star. He is a corporate mogul. He is a capitalist icon that, you know, is very well suited to step into this kind of, you know, this kind of role that, you know, we saw George Bush. We thought this guy can't be president. And then we saw him for 8 years, you know. And so Trump is this logical extension of this authoritarian, totalitarian kind of context that we've been raised in through, you know, the media, through the corporatization and privatization of more and more public space. And, you know, Trump just stepped right into the racist, media-driven divisions that are endemic in this country. And
no, I think you're absolutely right. I also think I mean, well, we're going to talk about a bunch of the things that happened in that contest, but I really do think that of the two candidates, Trump is the crook.
Yeah.
So so there's a great deal of irony in that she was labeled as a crook.
I think they're both crooks.
Ah.
But there's different methodologies that they go about their crookedness. You know, I mean, it's very clear from the Democrat email that she was crooked. I mean, they did everything that they could, the people that she had around her.
Oh, you're talking about the way in which Bernie was disconnected?
Yeah, he was edged out from the start. And you know that was something that originated with Clinton and with her inner circle. Mm-hmm. And that, we've got to stop before he even gets started. And, you know, the Clinton Foundation, and when asked in that third presidential debate about the Clinton Foundation, she sounded exactly like an advertisement. And rather than responding to the question of what she would do about her ties to the Clinton Foundation were she elected, she started shilling for the Clinton Foundation and talking about how many great things that they do around the world, right? Mm-hmm. And, you know, that's a mechanism for the Clintons to enrich themselves while impoverishing countries like Haiti. So...
it isn't crooks, really, but it could be perceived as that.
What's that?
Well, I just wanted to be clear on this. I think the Clinton Foundation has done a lot of good things, so I don't want to diss it as a total criminal conspiracy, because it wasn't.
Right. Well, but I also we should think about, I'm thinking of Arundhati Roy in the book Capitalism, A Ghost Story. Mm-hmm. She has a great section where she breaks down early on in the book philanthropy and how... these foundations really are funded off of the coffers of the capitalist system.
Mm-hmm.
And they can then control the acceptable valves of quote unquote progressivism or radicalism by funding those projects which appear to do good and yet continue to perpetuate the system of capitalism, don't actually propose any fundamental challenge to the system of capitalism.
No, you're right.
And
you're right in that.
Right. And abrogate the responsibility of government to actually care for its citizens and the environment.
Exactly. And then you throw in two high-level American politicians like the Clintons and the machinations of politics and the resources that they aggregate in order to send quote-unquote aid to these impoverished places all around the world. I'm not saying that they don't do good things and that there aren't people doing good things with their money, but the overall system, they're benefiting themselves. They're not benefiting the people of Haiti.
Agreed. Listen, we're going to have to let you go to give some others a chance. That was a brilliant call. Thank you. Thank you very much. All right, 503-231-8187 is the number to call. This is the Abe and Joe Talk Radio Program. I am Abe. That guy over there is Joe.
I'm Joe.
KBOO 90.7 FM. You can also drop us a line at the Facebook page, facebook.com/Abe and Joe, or on the Twitter wire at HonestAbe72. Coming up this morning on KBOO at 9 on Alternative Radio, Medea Benjamin speaks about the sinister U.S.-Saudi alliance.
Oh, I think that's so important.
Yeah, and she's great. Medea Benjamin. At 10, Chris Andre hosts Air Cascadia, headlines, interviews, and commentary. At 10:15, hear Letters and Politics. Professor David Kurtzer discusses the relationship between Mussolini and Pope Pius XI. I'm a history nerd, and that just piques my interest. Right
oh,
there.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I like the way Trump imitates Mussolini.
Yeah. Yeah.
He actually does. He has the crossed arms. Arrogant posture.
Agreed.
All the moves.
I think it's correct to compare Trump to a famous fascist, but I think Mussolini's the better match over Hitler, definitely.
Well, yeah, and I like Mussolini being hung upside down and all that stuff.
At 11 on stage in studio, D. May Roberts' year-long project Migrations, which features immigrant and refugee artists who've made Portland their home. And at 11:30 on Art Focus, Joseph Galivan brings you along on his trip to the National Portrait Gallery in London. All this and more coming up today on KBOO.
All right.
Here's five reasons that I think Hillary Clinton didn't.
I want to do an echo thing. Five reasons.
No, let's not. Let's not do the echo thing. Number one, misogyny. Number two, a combination of voter suppression and lower turnout. This was the first presidential election conducted after the Supreme Court decided to essentially invalidate the Voting Rights Act.
Right.
And I think that fact cannot be overestimated.
I think that's very important.
Yeah. Number three, years of prejudice and anti-Clinton witch hunting and the subsequent media distortion of that, which essentially in the end, and this again cannot be overestimated, allowed a big slice of the voting public to somehow equivocate Hillary's dodgy emails with Trump's actual demonstrable corruption. Somehow these were painted as roughly equivalent.
Which allows us now to have a kleptocracy.
It must be said again that of all the investigations that have been thrown at the Clintons over the years, they have come up with exactly nothing. Nothing at all. Now, this is, instead of exonerating her in the eyes of her conservative opponents, it has simply led to a preponderance of suspicion against her, a sort of where there's smoke, there must be fire kind of attitude, even though, again, they have come up with absolutely nothing. Now, that said, a lot of her behavior has not helped her out in this regard. She gave two big speeches to Goldman Sachs, the people who, perhaps more than any other entity, were responsible for the financial meltdown of 2008. Now, that's a gross generalization, but I'm going with it. She talked to them and wouldn't say what she told them. It turns out, after since those transcripts have been released, that it was pretty innocuous. But her refusal to say anything about it didn't help this perception, this vague belief that she was somehow a criminal.
Yeah, she should have said, hey, I did it for the money.
Yeah, yeah, that would have been...
No,
that
really,
would have been
everybody would have understood
answer.
That.
Yeah, but she didn't say anything at all. Now, I have to admit a certain sympathy for her, because if I had been hounded so relentlessly for so long by my enemies, I might be a little bit cagey with the information I chose to release as well.
Defensive, I think.
Defensive, yes, absolutely. So there was this very false and lingering perception of criminal behavior on her part that was not helped by her subsequent behavior.
And we got to remember how ordinary working people were suffering during this period of time.
Indeed. And we should also not forget that mere weeks before the election, Donald Trump settled a fraud lawsuit for $25 million. Now, there's a very...
Trump change.
There's a very helpful mental exercise when evaluating American politics, and it comes in very handy. It's called the shoes on the other foot test. Now, I want you to consider for a moment, if Secretary Clinton had settled a $25 million fraud lawsuit in the weeks leading up to the election, and I want you to consider the media firestorm that would have come down upon her head. That firestorm did not come down upon Donald Trump's head.
Well,
I'll just leave that there.
I think one of the things Trump did... And one of the things that's happened in American politics is that it's become more and more crass, and the performance behavior, the entertainment factor, becomes more important than truth, honesty, or the American way.
Yeah. Number four, the economic dislocation of the working class. Now, note I'm saying the working class, not just the white working class.
That's important. The words working class were never used except by Bernie.
Yeah, agreed. No, I don't think that's entirely true. I'm virtually certain that Secretary Clinton spoke about the working class.
Let's say I didn't hear it.
All right. But for whatever reason, her message did not resonate with the working class, especially the white working class, the way that Donald Trump's did, which is an irony of amazing proportions, because he's been an elitist his entire life. He has risen to heights of wealth and prominence largely on the backs of the working class and by screwing the working class repeatedly.
And by discriminating against persons of color. I mean,
on and on. Yeah. So there's that. And reason number five, a combination of the Comey letters, James Comey of the FBI, and interference from the Russians. Now, before you call me up and tell me I'm silly to think that the Russians delivered the election to Trump, that's not what I'm saying. I'm saying it was one factor among many.
Well, but Comey.
But Comey, on the other hand, I think was, in the end, a huge factor. He released two letters, one a couple weeks before the election saying, hey, we found these other emails that may or may not have a bearing on the investigation into Hillary's emails. These, of course, were the emails surrounding Congressman Anthony Weiner's penis. Once again, Weiner's penis is a factor politically. Who'd have thunk it? That's what a few years ago it was as well. And here it is again. And then the second letter he released, which was just, I think, the week prior to the election, essentially said, oh, no, these emails have no bearing on the previous investigation into her email server. But by then, of course, the damage was done.
Yeah.
By then, of course, several major news outlets had run headlines saying that the email investigation had been reopened, when in fact it had not. So that's damage done right there.
And I want to emphasize something really important. In the history of the United States, the FBI, beginning with J. Edgar Hoover's making it into something when it wasn't much of anything, has always been a reactionary force doing great harm to democracy. The FBI is an evil conspiracy against democracy.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I read some reporting towards the end of the electoral cycle that which suggested that as an organization, there was a resounding not only anti-Clinton bias, but an anti-Democrat bias, and that there was the rank and file had a pretty serious case of dislike for her. And that was evidenced in the end by Director Comey's almost inexplicable decision to interfere with an ongoing election. Yeah, that was completely unprecedented. And I think it had, I don't know how you would measure it, a measurable outcome on the election.
In the interest of full disclosure, I had a run-in with the FBI once in my life, a long time ago, and discovered what an evil organization it truly is.
All right. So those are my...
Those are good. Reasons. Those five are very good.
Let's hear what our listeners have to say. 503-231-8187. Mark writes into the Facebook page to say, Bernie filled stadiums with 20, 30, and 40,000 enthusiastic voters while Hillary filled people with uncertainty and cynicism. Hillary, like Trump, was corrupt and incompetent, confused Wall Street corporate profits with community health, supported unjust trade agreements and the Iraq invasion. Now we have someone with zero competence in taxation, spending, Social Security, and healthcare who repeats phrases like drain the swamp. Maybe the good news is that he will be impeached within a year so the damage will be contained. Now we have a government of only form and appearance, like Al Capone riding into town with a new exciting lipstick.
That's a nice image.
That was
like
a very
that.
Nice image. John, let's go to the phones. John. Good morning.
We're not hearing you, John.
All right. Well, we'll come back to John if we can.
Okay.
Who else do we have? Barth, good morning.
Hi. Got me, Mike?
Yeah.
You're
great.
Good.
Early quibble. Joe talked about the Free State of Jones and said the Confederacy waged a pointless war. They had a point. They didn't win.
Yes, they did have a
successful war.
No, you're right. I shouldn't have put it quite that way.
Okay, well, I'm just getting on your case.
That's all right.
Bernie was snookered. The media dissed him. The media ignored him. Your earlier message about him filling stadiums and getting zero ink and zero eyeballs at news hour is very important. Yes, Bernie had some skeletons in the closet. I think that if his campaign if his campaign had gotten some traction, he would have been able to bring out the rather larger and more ominous skeletons surrounding Mr. Trump.
Right.
He got cut off at the knees, and somebody suggested that Hillary and the Clinton campaign was behind the neutering of Bernie, and that's not entirely clear. I suspect that the Republicans had a lot to do with pushing him out of the limelight and dampening his media exposure, because they felt that between Hillary and Donald had a strong chance. But between Donald and Bernie, I don't know that his chances would have been as strong, because that would have given people something to actually believe in besides making America great.
Besides which, he's Grandpa. We like Grandpa.
Well, you know, yeah, there's warm and fuzzy there, but also he made sense. He actually had things to say. He also appealed to people's emotion. He appealed to people's self-interest and also to their national interest, the idea of improving the country by making it a good place for everyone. Trump wants to improve the country by making it a good place for rich white people.
Yeah.
Yeah, and, no, I think your analysis is pretty much correct.
You talked about Hillary not talking, releasing any information about her speeches of Goldman Sachs, and you characterized her as cagey and defensive. I think the word here is gun-shy. You know, she didn't want to do anything that would bring more negative media attention to her, and so she ran the other direction, much to her chagrin.
And again, I have sympathy for that. I mean, I can't imagine what it must have been like to endure that sort of thing for as long as she's had
to endure. I think I want to add one thing, which is everyone probably hearing this knows, but it's really important to understand. There is a national media bias against liberal left candidacy.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
Well, the media is owned by very, very right-wing and strong and well-connected Republicans, largely. There are very few liberal media outlets, despite what the right keeps whining about. And one of the big reasons I think Trump came out ahead is because of the gerrymandering and the
I'm glad you mentioned that. That's very important.
I mean, at a even at a very local level, for the last 15 years or so, Republicans have been getting themselves into positions that allowed them to run the elections in many of the states, and certainly much of the pivotal states are run by Republican machines. I think that the answer to canceling the vote recount was, if the one of the answers was the Attorney General saying, if the number of votes in the basket don't match the number of signatures on the poll register, then those cannot be recounted.
Yeah.
Hello?
Yeah,
that's surely what you're talking about here. I mean,
well, and yeah. I want to add one thing that's really important strategically, regardless of all this. The three key states in this election, in the northern Midwest, industrial states that are suffering losses of jobs, were never adequately served, never adequately paid attention to by the Democratic Party during this election.
Yes, but Amy Goodman's show talked to Greg Palast and others. They said that the margin of Trump victory in those states was overcome by about three times of people who were not allowed to vote from vote checks.
No, you're right.
And
you're
from
right.
Gerrymandering. Mm-hmm. And the big thing about the Trump campaign was the racist dog whistling that was, you know, from the very get-go.
I think it went right beyond dog whistling into overt racist statement.
It's
that's
true.
How he diverged from past Republicans. He didn't need to speak in code anymore. He just came right out and said it. The Mexicans are rapists.
Yeah. And anybody that's, you know, making protests in my conference here should be beaten up and taken out and thumped up. So anyway, that's
I like
that's
the
my
term thumped up. That's new to me. Thumped up.
Well,
it's good. No, I like it.
Well, it gets the message across.
You got it.
From the podium or elsewhere.
Hey,
thank you, gentlemen.
Thank
Good
you
day.
Very much,
Happy
sir,
New
for the
Year.
Call. It's same
Good
to
luck.
You.
Happy New Year.
All right, who's next? Back to John. Do we have you, John?
Yeah.
Sorry. All right. What's
sorry,
on your mind?
Missed the window. Here's my three quick points. I think to add, I believe I can add to your list of five by saying the criminal corporate media in general that never, I listen to NPR enough to know, never have once mentioned Greg's Palast voters purged. And
that's right.
I mean, to not mention such a big thing even, you know, I think NPR makes an excuse for itself when they say, they'll report something big and then say, oh, we reported it. But I don't think they reported that once. And that's a very big thing that won the election for Trump. And Greg Palast has been talking about this for long enough. It was way before the election that he was talking about this. So they should have reported that at some point. So, okay, a couple of other points. I listened to Bernie Sanders for a long time on Air America when Tom Hartman interviewed him every Friday morning.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't really have a very high opinion of him in general. He seemed kind of humorless and arrogant. And so I'm holding a grudge against Bernie because Jill Stein reached out to him and he ignored her completely.
Mm.
So them together, maybe with her as president and him as vice president, would have probably had no problem defeating the Trumpster.
I have my doubts about that, but I agree. I agree with you in spirit.
Well, she's really eloquent.
Yeah, she is.
And people want to vote for a woman. They just didn't want Hillary. Hmm. Okay, let's see. The third point I was going to make was about... I think it was about all the other issues related to the election. The defective voter machines, the lower number of voter places to vote,
mm-hmm.
You know, all these things end up affecting the Democratic voter more than...
Yep, absolutely. Voters of color, disproportionately.
So, basically, we don't have a democracy anymore because we've got the corporate system telling the media what... Well, you can say this, but say it once, and you can't say this at all. That's my.
Well, I appreciate that point, but I would just say we don't have a democracy. Period.
Yep. Hey, thanks for the call. Very much appreciate it. John writes into the Facebook page. Let's not forget the old adage: bad press is better than no press, and Trump got a hell of a lot of press. Yes, that's true. I saw some valuations. Now, this was during the campaign, so I don't know where it ended up. That he had literally received billions of dollars worth of free airtime.
Oh, there's no question about it. I mean, he was great copy, as they say in
yes.
the print media, and he knew how to play that. In fact, he successfully played it to make money with his stupid apprentice programs.
He did. Now, before we go back to the phones, I want to bring up one more factor in all of this. Now, I've made the case over the years that political identity, when it comes right down to it, is more about tribal identity than it is about intellectual positions or policy or anything like that. In the end, for a lot of people, it comes down to, well, I'm going to vote for this guy because he's on my team. And I'm not going to vote for the other guy because he or she's on the other team. So this is what I think allowed many people to, when weighing Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump, to conclude objectively somehow that he was the preferable, better candidate. When I think on any measure, with any yardstick, she was far and away the more qualified candidate.
No, absolutely.
But she plays for the wrong team.
That's an interesting insight. And that goes also to the question of misogyny.
It does. Yeah. And to illustrate this, I want to go to, I'm going to go to the data.
Not the data.
According to the Washington Post, white evangelical voters supported Donald Trump to the tune of 80-16%. That's overwhelming support. Now, these are self-identified values voters, right?
Right.
So I'm wondering which Christian values demonstrated by Donald Trump really, really elevated him in their eyes.
Well, he was very good at grabbing women.
That's right. Maybe it was that. Maybe it was the fraud. Maybe it was the refusal to pay contractors who did work for him. Maybe it was the fact he'd been married 3 times. I don't know. I don't know. See, and this is what I mean. They voted for him because he plays for the right team. It really didn't matter how he lived his life or the values that he demonstrated consistently over a period of decades. None of those things mattered.
So ripping off people, yeah. Grabbing women, being dishonest in his life
right.
and in his work.
Right.
That didn't matter.
White evangelical white evangelical voters, I see you and I see your crap. You don't have a leg to stand on here. Now, this you might sense that this is a burr under my saddle. Yeah, it makes me really angry. It makes me angry that people are unable to separate religion from politics. And it makes me even more angry when people who profess to be religiously motivated political voters ignore the values that they profess so loudly in their lives. That is rank hypocrisy, white evangelicals. You got a lot to answer
for. So now you're going to attack white evangelicals?
Yes, I M, and that's just the beginning. I could devote an entire show to attacking white evangelicals, but we're not going to do it right now.
Thank goodness.
Yes. Let's go back to the phones. Mitch, good morning.
Good morning. When I think about what my complaints are against the commercial media, it's that rather than look at anybody running for public office's record, they talk about stylistic points in horse races. And
Yes. Here I am. Yes.
Listening to KBU, and we're doing the same thing.
I don't think that's what we're doing.
And we're falling into, instead of keeping the issue as good government, we're talking about labels. So we're going after... I'm a liberal, you're a conservative, I'm a evangelical Christian, I'm a secular person, when the fact of the matter is, if Hillary had gotten elected, what I'm upset about Trump for, and I didn't vote for him, but what I think his base could be upset about is that he ran as one thing, and in picking his cabinet and making his pre-inaugural picks for who's going to run the government, he has shown his base that he is going to be the opposite of what he ran on. With Hillary Clinton, we had a record of her running for New York State Senator twice and being Secretary of State. And the question is, okay, so what if Hillary had won? Would she be governing differently than she ran? She ran on wanting to regulate hedge funds. Her son-in-law runs one of the biggest money-losing hedge funds in the United States. Not one journalist asked her about that. And you know what? Trump didn't ask her about it either, because Trump knew what he was going to govern as. But here we are listening to KBU, and we can't leave the body politic with deeper understanding of what the swamp of government is. You're going to talk about stylistic points and
is that
and
really what you're coming
consultant?
Away from this conversation with?
Yes,
that it's
absolutely.
Been all about style.
Oh, Joe's opening, the first 5 minutes was just a dead-on imitation of what commercial radio shock jocks would do.
Okay. Now, I think we should make something perfectly clear here. I think neither Joe nor myself is advancing the idea that Hillary Clinton would have been an ideal president or that her policies would have been a panacea for the ails that beset America. Well, neither of us are advancing that.
Where's the analysis of the policies and how would she have been better at good government had she been elected? Where is that?
That's been a feature of our programs throughout the campaign.
We've had a corporate coup d'etat and you guys are talking about how they come across on TV.
Among other things, yes. Because that is an important factor in electoral politics.
And if that's how you deepen the conversation and distinguish yourself from commercial media, God bless.
Thank you for the call. 503-231-8187.
I don't remember what I said at the beginning of the show. I can't
you,
even
you
get...
You talked about her coming across unpleasantly.
Well, yes.
Yeah. Who's next? Lynn, good morning.
Oh, good morning. I didn't hear all of your 5 points, but I just in case you didn't mention this one, I think the real reason that she lost is that she was like... Hillary was like a big soft pillow pressed over the face of every idealistic kid, smothering all the juice out of them.
No, I did not listen.
Well, I like that's the most reasons. That's the most but interesting mixed metaphor I've heard
yeah,
in years.
Fantastic.
Thank you.
Oh yes, yes. I don't know if you knew any of those idealistic kids, but I did, and you know they left work to go to that huge, wonderful rally.
Is that the one where the bird came in?
With the bird, yeah.
I like the bird.
Yeah, what do you get, like 30,000 people or something? But my point is, it was heartbreaking to see that happen. And, of course, he got like a huge percentage of the youth vote. I mean, what was it, like 90% something? But anyway... I think that was huge, what happened.
And that's a tragedy. I think that's a tragedy of this particular election. Listen, thank you very much for the call.
Okay, bye-bye.
My son, this was the first presidential election in which he was able to vote. And it left him feeling demoralized, depressed, as if it was a completely useless exercise. And that I profoundly regret. Because that's the last thing you want first-time voters to leave with?
Well, it depends. I have mixed feelings about that. It might be a good thing to realize that voting is not really an act of creating a democracy, that in fact our system is designed pretty much to maintain establishment politics.
Yeah, and we had to talk about that. But as a father, it hurt me to see him.
Disillusioned.
He's so disillusioned the first time out of the gate. David writes to Twitter to say, Clinton lost. Too many people sound as if it was only one thing that sealed her fate. But it's nice to see Cabo acknowledging the myriad of reasons. I would love to have more tweets during our show. At HonestAbe72. If you're out there, you're tweeting, tweet us. 503-231-8187. Who's next? Paul, good morning.
Good morning. Can you hear me?
Yep. Yeah.
Oh, quick question, and I'll take your answer or response or non-response off the line. I've been listening intermittently, so I didn't get the whole thread of the discussion this morning, but talking about Hillary, per se. My problem with Hillary, and I voted for her even though I love Bernie, was she's been in our face since 1992. That's about 24 years. And frankly, I was just tired of her. Trump has been around as long, but at least he's played different roles. I think there's a lot of Hillary fatigue out there. Thank you.
Okay, thanks for the
call. No, actually, I think the Hillary fatigue factor is a real thing, but not a fair thing.
No, it's not a fair thing. Yeah. So. Like, who cares? Who cares, really? Evaluate her on the merits and then vote for her or don't. I mean, if you're just weary that she's been in the public eye for 3 decades or however long it's been, I don't buy that as a legitimate reason to.
Well, I think it's easy to victimize the Clintons, who have been political activists, in many cases as good players and in other cases as less than good players, for a long time. And to disqualify someone because they've been around a long time is kind of weird.
Yep, I agree. Let's maybe get one more. Who we got? Paul or Tim. Good morning, Tim. Oh, no, we lost Tim.
I think we can live without him, I guess.
Yeah, I think we probably can.
You know, I think an interesting criticism comes up in saying, I think what I heard about the beginning of the show is that it was facile and talked about effects and things that are not fundamental. But I also believe that politics in this country is facile and not particularly profound.
Agreed. Now the criticism that it's more important to talk about matters of policy, that's true. But I think you disregard the other stuff at your peril. To pretend that this facility doesn't have an impact on the outcome is naive.
Huh. Okay, well, we're not going to do this anymore, are we?
What?
Have the Hillary thing?
No. No, we're just going to segue right on into the ongoing clown show that's going to start towards the end of this month.
I wish it were just a clown show. I'm afraid that this is the opening gambit of a overt fascist as opposed to a hidden fascist.
You're hoping for overt fascism?
I want to see the American people look in the eyes seriously at what happens when a democracy really goes bad.
Yeah, I'm glad you qualified that. Because, I don't want to see goose-stepping Trump youth. I really don't want to see that.
Oh, I don't know. It's so handsome.
No. On that note, thanks, everybody, for participating in today's show. You guys make listening to Joe and I tolerable.
Really?
And that's coming from one of the people identified as Joe and I. You make it all tolerable.
I really also want to wish everybody a happy new year. And say the fight continues. You must participate in the political process at every opportunity, on the street, in the voting booth, everywhere, because it's scary, folks. Get involved.
From the war against disorder, from the sirens night and day, fires of the homeless, from the ashes of the gay democracy.
In Oregon, a person with mental illness can be charged with a nonviolent crime and end up in a jail cell for months in a deteriorating mental state and without restorative treatment. Tune into Prison Pipeline on January 9th to hear Disability Rights Oregon's proposed legislation that will help people with mental illness who become entangled with the criminal justice system. That's Prison Pipeline, January 9th at 6:30 p.m.
Hello, you're listening to KBOO Portland. The time is 9 o'clock, and my name is Tave. Good morning. At 9 o'clock, coming up right next, will be Alternative Radio. Medea Benjamin speaks about the sinister U.S.-Saudi alliance. At 10, Chris Andre hosts Air Cascadia, headlines, interviews, and commentary. At 10:15, hear Letters and Politics. Professor David Kurtzer discusses the relationship.